You are listening to the Sacred Geometry Portal podcast, where each Monday musing plus one in-depth interview per moon takes you through the portal to the patterns of nature, the architecture of the cosmos, and the divine language of our minds. Your host, Elizabeth Diane, expands your perception of the world and the awe of creation. With a light heart, she encourages an exploration to find the truth as it is evident to you. Every episode opens doors to self-empowerment, demystifies the power of symbology and archetype, intersects relationships with matter and spirit, then circles back to ground in these seeds of life into the kind of wisdom you can apply to your being, soul, and purpose. Welcome to the Sacred Geometry Portal podcast.
Welcome, Sacred Spheres, to this guest broadcast with an amazing woman who has been, shall we say, steeped in water for a long time now, for about 8 years. Veda Austin is a water researcher, a public speaker, a mother, an artist, and an author. She's dedicated the last 8 years of her life observing and photographing the life of water. She believes that water is fluid intelligence. I love that. Observing itself through every living organism on the planet in the universe. Her primary area of focus is photographing water in its state of creation and the space between liquid and ice. It's through her remarkable crystallographic photos that water reveals its awareness not only of creation, but thought and intention through imagery. And Veda brings a message of hope and joy from the very source of life itself, as water is life. And she says water is transparent. It knows no color, creed, or religion. Water does not judge, nor does it label. It will enter the body of an ant as easily as it will enter the body of a living king or homeless person through a tree or dragonfly. Water is our constant companion. From the moment we are conceived, it is always with us, even upon death. It is water that evaporates from the physical, rising upwards to the heavens. So, Veda, thank you so much for being on the Sacred Geometry Portal podcast, and welcome.
Well, thank you so much. I always say this, but it's always interesting hearing my bio read back to me. And I need to change it because it's been 10 years now, not 8, so I haven't updated in a while.
Yeah. So it was 2013 when you started this.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, everything is a journey, isn't it? So. Actually, within my work, the area of work, it's been 10 years, but I always say, you know, we are bodies of water. So our work with water has always been, by molecular count, not by volume, we're 99% water, which means there's more water molecules in our bodies than stars in the Milky Way. So when we consider that even our eye lens is 99% water, which is really an interesting thing, because when we think of water, we think of it just kind of like coming out of a tap. It has a certain way of flowing, but our eye lens isn't doing that unless of course we cry, which come out of our tear ducts. But the eye lens is a remarkable type of structured water. And because we literally see the world through the lens of water, this is a very important thing to even think about, that fact is that we see and view the world through water every day.
That is profound. I've never thought of that. I've thought of it as like, oh, I've heard it's an extension of the brain. Well, that's true too. but we're looking through water all the time.
Yeah, well, there's so much
Wow.
of even the retina is water. And I was speaking to a friend of mine. Her and her husband were the directors for a show called Magical Egypt. And they were talking about how the ancient Egyptians knew very, very well the significance of the amount of DMT that was in the retina. And that the ancient Egyptians believed that we actually viewed the world through the lens of watery DMT.
Wow. I love that. That is profound. And that's interesting when I think about, well, so many things come to me, that the ancient Egyptians have such an amazing history themselves. Like, where did their knowledge come from? And they've left all of this for us, and they still are alive with it in many ways. And the way we see the world then is reflected back to us through water and the work that you're doing. Yeah, tell us a bit about how you got started and what's the main body of your work. And then I think we're going to go on many different tangents. And
sure.
Yeah, let's crystallize these thoughts for people.
It's funny, I often say that. It's like a
Okay.
thought literally crystallized in the Petri dish. So for anyone that doesn't know me, which is still lots of people, essentially, my specialty is in crystallography. It's just a fancy way of saying that I photograph a specific ice in a specific stage of freezing. And I inspire the water in some way prior to freezing and then freeze it using a short-term method of crystallography, and then photograph the imagery that appears in the ice. And basically, what I've seen in sheer quantity. So I have over 40,000 photos of water responding to consciousness and environment in incredibly intelligent ways. So an example could be that I take, say, I'm just looking at what I've got like handy. Say I have a coin. Maybe I put the coin into a Petri dish for 30 seconds, take the coin out, then use my freezing method, and then photograph the ice. I will likely see a coin image in the ice. So if I was to write the word money and put the dish of water on top of the word for 30 seconds. It's a number I like to give to people as a protocol because I teach how to do this as well. Mm-hmm. And then remove the Petri dish off the word money, put it into the freezer, use my method. I will also see a coin. And so this is the kind of thing it's just as a very vague example. I guess it's not that vague, it's fairly clear, but there are so many things you can do. And there's many, many, many things that I've done and discovered through this method. But it began because there were three people who inspired me. Most people have heard of Masaru Emoto.
Yes.
His work was not embraced by the scientific community at all. And that is because he openly shares that he cherry picks the photos to best suit what he's trying to show.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, what he did for such a huge, huge group of people around the world was to open them up to see themselves as sensitive bodies of water, sensitive to thoughts, words, and environment.
Yes. Yes.
And that was very significant. And it made people coming through who are talking about water storing information have an easier time, because by that time more science has come to light that shares that water as a liquid crystal, which is this fourth phase of water. There's a liquid, solid, gas, and then a type of gel or plasma, and the gel type of fourth phase water is what Dr. Gerald Pollack talks about a lot in his book, The Fourth Phase of Water. Is the kind of water inside of our cells. And you can find that kind of water outside of the body in some types of water. spring water under pressure. Any water been under pressure for a long time tends to have fourth phase water in it. It absorbs more light, it has a negative charge, it's more viscous, and it's slightly alkaline, and it also has a lattice-like molecular structure, similar to that of a crystal, except that it's more fluid. So it has these interesting properties. So I've digressed. I'll come back to Omoto's work. So that idea of water being able to store information has become more accepted in certain areas of the water science world. The next person who inspired me a lot, and he's not so well known, but I hope he is soon, because honestly, I talk about him enough. His name is Laurent Costa. He's a French microscopic photographer, and he takes photographs of water in a similar way to Masaru Emoto, except that he is not entered into this as the experimenter. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to experiment on water because he believes that water is a kind of living body. And he has great deal of respect, and he thinks of it as a spiritual teacher. So the idea of experimenting on it doesn't resonate for him any more than it does for me. I'm very much in the same mindset as Laurent. So rather than kind of tell water what to do, if you will, he basically would just observe water and invite water to share whatever it wanted. And so sometimes he would smile at the water before he would flash freeze it and microscopically take photos. Laurent was seeing faces in the water, happy faces, smiley faces in the water. He was seeing fish. He was seeing hearts, things that were somehow relative to him in his day or even in the week building up to the time he photographed it. There would be things that would show up in the ice that were relative to that week. It's as if the water was able to, or perhaps had been accompanying him along his journey. And given that he's looking at this through a microscope, he also saw geometries like Emoto did, which the ones you might kind of imagine look a bit like snowflakes, mm-hmm. except that Laurent's were very much more hexagonal in their formations. And they have like more of the straight lines rather than the kind of ferny shapes you might imagine in mm-hmm. the snowflakes.
Okay.
And so this was interesting that he was getting both pictures and geometries. And I come from a very artistic background. I'm a researcher, but I'm also an artist. So we're all rather multifaceted. I have a friend who's yes. a lawyer and an actor. So, you know, you get this. And
it's a balance.
But I like science and I like yeah. art and I'm very spiritual. So in that respect, you know, I like to look at all three aspects and overlay them. And when I think science, art, and consciousness overlay beautifully, then you have a truth. And so...
Well said.
Thank you. Yeah. And so when you look at art compared to, say, two geometries, although sacred geometry is part of the entire fabric of the universe, it makes it up and we can't, it's always there. Art's a really human thing, if you will. Yeah. You know, we look back at our ancestors that would draw in caves. I mean, there was pictures there and that they had drawn and that had come from seemingly nothing. They get a piece of charcoal and they start. And it starts with a thought. And that thought inspires the hand to put the charcoal on the wall and start moving it to design a shape of something that they've seen that we may never see that isn't even alive today. Yes. And so art is a very, very powerful thing, and to see water design artistically is not something people would expect it could do. So the third person who inspired me to begin was a man by the name of Thomas Hieronymus. Actually, my daughter and I were talking about him yesterday, and He was a radionic engineer. And actually, the more I read about him, the more of a genius I discover he really was. And he was working in the area of scalar waves and all kinds of stuff.
Oh, wow.
So he made a really interesting observation when he went into a Parisian meat market on a very cold day. He noticed that the freshly placed organs of an animal appeared to be affecting the way the frost froze on the glass behind where they were placed. For example, the frost would freeze into the shape of a liver organ above a liver organ, and so on and so forth. And his hypothesis was that there was some kind of life force energy still emanating out of these organs, because, and he put that down to there being water in the blood. And each organ of a body has something called a sonic signature. And a rudimentary way of explaining that would be it's kind of like a cymatic imprint that holds the information of form and function mm-hmm. of the organ. And so this the water within the blood still held that because it was still very fresh. The blood hadn't gone coagulated too much, and it was still very red and runny. And so he thought that the information was exchange was happening between two types of water, the water that was more liquid in the blood and the water that is in the air. And the water in the air is often overlooked, but of great right. significance. The fact that we breathe mm-hmm. out means there's water in the air. And I'm talking, and I'm sure he was talking in much more subtle ways than the obvious. And so the information exchange was done. And then as the water in the air hit the glass, it took the shape and form of the organ, the information blueprint of that organ. And there are a number of reasons I found his work interesting. Well, not his work, but his observation, mainly because he was seeing it with his naked eye. And mm-hmm. and so that meant it was kind of quite huge, really, macroscopically, if you will. Yeah. And so even Rudolf Steiner suggested to his students that they observe how the frost freezes on a butcher's window compared to that of a florist's.
Oh, and interesting.
So, you know, and you think about glass. Glass is essentially made of silica. Silica is a crystal. Crystals store information, and glass is also hydrophilic. It's water-loving. Yeah. And so one of the reasons I use glass petri dishes is because of all of those factors, it helps water to store information for longer.
Right.
And so after seeing that and realizing that things can be seen with your naked eye, I was encouraged, because 10 years ago I didn't have a microscope, and I really wanted to see for myself if water could store information, because up until that point, this idea of water memory, if you will, was floating around, and you hear about it and you read about it, but how can you find out for yourself if that is even real? Because most people don't have a lab that they can work in on this specific area. Mm-hmm. And so I realized by putting all of those three together that the secret seemed to be in the freezing, where the unseen becomes seen. And so I thought, well, I'm going to use this petri. I had a petri dish from another project, and a glass one, and I'm like, I'm going to put some water in it, and I'm going to project a thought into it. I'm going to stick it in the freezer and see what happens. And that was my like really basic idea. Yeah. So as I was holding my petri dish of water, I noticed there was a bit of fluff floating around in it. So I put my hand in to take out the fluff, consciously thinking, I wonder if my hand will have any impact on the water's quote unquote memory. Sure. I'm like, well, that thought will do. And I was using spring water at the time. People, I often have to say this because I'll forget to say it. I've used all kinds of waters, and Brilliant. We've discovered there are signature patterns of different types of waters and four main ones, which we'll cover soon.
Okay, great.
So I was like, okay, I was holding my petri dish, had that thought will do. I put it into the freezer, and then I basically forgot about it. And this was when I didn't know any better at all. I hadn't learnt my short-term freezing technique, and I completely froze the water solid, and I had no attachment to any outcome. I was just curious, you know.
Yeah.
So I came back to it, took it out of the freezer, held it up to the light, and took a photo on my iPhone. My Petri dish is about the size of my hand, which is just under 10 centimeters in diameter. So the image that was in the ice took up half of the Petri dish, and the image was so undeniably a hand that when Dr. Gerald Pollack years ago invited me to do a survey for image recognition, so he said put a bunch of photos together. So I put 25 photos together. Underneath each photo of ice, it said, what does this image look like to you? And then I gave it to people to circulate on social media. And 297 people, I believe, filled out the survey over a period of days. And 85% of people could recognize the imagery in the ice for what the influence was prior to freezing. And out of those 25 images, there were three that 100% of people could recognize for what the influence was prior to freezing. One of those 100% was this hand that I'm talking about. Wow. So I'm wanting to demonstrate that this isn't abstract art that we're kind of like going, oh, really, is that, I can kind of maybe make this out. I'm talking about image recognition here.
Amazing. Yes.
So that's kind of a big thing. So then I kind of was a bit freaked out, quite honestly, because I didn't expect that. And it was like an X-ray of my hand. And so then I went down to the beach and I got some seawater because I was thinking of any water.
I'm so sorry. I'm fascinated that it was like an X-ray, that it looked more like the outer outline and the bones.
Yes.
Which you put your hand in it as opposed to other methods where you might put a picture under it. And do you notice dimensionality then? I'll let you talk more about that in the seawater. You were talking about seawater too.
Yeah, no, but that's a really good point. The negative thing is an interesting one. And don't let me forget to talk about the seawater. And then I'll show you also what I'm talking about.
That'd be wonderful.
But there's one iconic image that I have, and it's I've got an art gallery of some of my work at the moment in New Zealand. And I went over there because I hadn't been there. The man printed them all out and I went for the first time to go and see it. And I went with my friend Wendy, and I've used her photo as an inspiring influence prior to freezing. And I've done that twice. So she was the first face of water. So we always joke, you know, you're the face of water, Wendy. And so you'll see her face in a minute. And so I had put my Petri dish on top of her photo for 30 seconds, removed, and her face appeared in the ice. So what I did years later was to use the ice photo as the inspiring influence. So I showed water. I showed water what it created. And the interesting thing is that it created a negative of her face.
Oh, wow. That's
so what
really
does this mean?
Interesting.
I posted this way down in my Instagram, and I don't think anyone really got how significant it was.
Right.
So I might repost and make a big fuss about it because it's actually really interesting. So I went to the beach and I froze a thin layer of seawater. And I was a bit nervous because I was thinking, well, if something relative to the ocean shows up in the ice, then maybe this isn't just random, you know, because the first time it could always be random. And I guess it could always be random, you know, maybe 10 or 20 times, but not 40,000. So, yeah. So the next image that I saw was this amazing fish, and it was the shape of the fish with the gills and the fins and a perfectly round eye. And really, that's when my freezer became my most used household appliance. And I still am just as prolific as I ever was, except for the fact that my technique changed dramatically. And as I became more familiar with the new science of water. And the new science of water, it's an important one because Jerry Pollack, as well as a lesser known man who is fascinating called Dr. Marcel Vogel, he worked for IBM for years, and that term Vogel crystal comes from Marcel Vogel, and he talked about this fourth phase of water a lot. And this was before Jerry Pollock kind of coined it as fourth phase water. And you, like I mentioned earlier, this type of water can be found in water, not all waters, but certainly in some, and it can be identified. And so the one of the most incredible waters that in the world, so far as longevity and health goes, is in an area, a blue zone called the Hunza Valley in northern Pakistan. It's where the people live the longest and the healthiest. And it's many scientists went to go and study the people. Granted, they're living organically, they don't have all the Wi-Fi and all the stuff, and they're in community. That's got to help. But also, they only drink glacial water. And glacial water is in the stage between liquid and ice. They're drinking fourth phase water all day long. The other interesting aspect of that type of water is that it has colloidal silica, so it's not dissolved. So it's and when foreigners go up to experience the water of the Hunza Valley, the locals have to dilute it because the people that go feel like they're drinking syrup. It's so thick. So there is something very, very unique about this type of water.
I've
Excuse me.
had some too from Mount Rainier. A company started bottling it, so I know that it was in plastic, that the properties are going to change. However, it was still like that. Very thick.
Very thick.
Really
And we
amazing
don't.
taste.
I would love to try it personally, just so I can experience it and connect with it. So when we start understanding that as water's freezing, but before it's frozen, something special is happening there. And the same thing in the melt, before as it's melting, but before it's liquid. So I began to open my freezer earlier and earlier and earlier to see when the water was beginning to design and if I could figure out when the fourth phase of water was happening, like in my freezer. And so when I had my favorite freezer, which was set at about minus 26, 27 degrees Celsius, it was such an efficient freezer. I still talk about it so fondly, like a lost lover. But
Yes,
anyway, and so,
you're cold as ice.
it was so efficient. And anyway, so I would put my water in, and in only about 4 minutes and 20 seconds, there was liquid on top and ice underneath. And I would take the Petri dish out. I tipped the liquid water away to reveal the most incredibly clear three-dimensional crystallography. And when I saw that, I realized that that was the missing piece. And it showed, and I have demonstrations of my old technique and my new technique in my, when I screen share. But, and it's important to see it because you really understand the significance of it. But understanding that water freezes in three layers is also important. So the first freeze is the first freeze. The second freeze is a layer that's kind of built up above the first freeze, and then water creates this like ice sandwich where there's two kind of round bits of, it's like an Oreo, you know, there's two biscuits of ice and then there's a liquid bit in the middle. And then when that liquid bit in the middle freezes, that holds pretty much nearly all of the, well, 80% of the total dissolved solids, and that's what clouds your ice. The second freeze has less total dissolved solids, but some. But it covers over the first impression. So that's why I'm amazed when I look back at my work that I got the kind of imagery that I did in that first year.
I think the water might have really wanted you to see it. That's my projection.
When I am doing this work, I'm being mindful that these three stages of freezing are very important to know. And it's easy to overfreeze water. So there are certain ways you get to understand what that looks like. Now, I think it might be time to share some photos. We've talked a lot
I love
about my
that. Yes, let's look at those photos. And I love that you are offering videos, and you have a book and another one coming out, so people can, if they see this and want to do it, yeah, they'll be able to
Absolutely.
look in the links and find you online. So
Yeah,
let's
people can learn
see.
how to do this off my, just get the PDF of how to do it. And also, I do workshops. Okay, so I really like starting with this quote from Rudolf Steiner. He says, "The human being thinks he creates intelligence, whereas he only draws intelligence from the universal sea of intelligence." And it's quite a big statement, really, because we like to think that we are creating our own intelligence. And that's an interesting idea, because what is the I or the we that thinks that? So
Right.
it's a very big philosophical start, really, but let's go forward. So I mentioned three people. This is Masaru Emoto's work, as I'm sure everyone knows. But his work was very much in contrast, which in some ways, I mean, people as humans seem to really, really love contrast, the
Oh,
best and
yes.
the worst of things. And in a way, it's kind of, it can be kind of hard, because one of the ways I developed hydroglyphs, which is something we'll touch on, in the fact that there are three ways that water can communicate, if you will. I can't think of a better word for right now. Signature patterns, art, and hydroglyphs. So when my son saw Emoto's work, which was again very contrasting, he has one with heavy metal kind of versus classical music. And one of the issues with that is that when especially children see something where there are two options and they don't fit into either, they tend to assume the worst. So my son said, "Oh, Mum, I think water hates me." And I'm like, "Why?" And he said, "Because, well, I don't like classical music, and I don't really like heavy metal, but I like rap and Tupac swears, and I don't think water likes swearing." And I'm like, "No, no, water's not in judgment. People are in judgment." And I said, "I'm pretty sure whoever did those tests probably didn't like heavy metal." And but to someone very new, it might appear that water only likes classical music and John Lennon. And that's actually, I don't believe that that's a truth. In Maori, that my father is New Zealand native Maori, there is a word called wairua, for, and that means spirit. Wai means water, rua means two, the two waters, the physical and spiritual waters. And I think that we have both within us and within all life forms. And the most spiritual aspect of water, or one of them, is that it is the observer, it is the witness, it is not in judgment. And we're able to observe ourselves. So this was important that I show him that water likes to do when it comes to all genres of music. So I did so many genres of music, and what I observed is that water likes to pick up on words. And when I used the song Stairway to Heaven, I did it repeated tests, and I would leave the room every time I would play a song. Some songs I was just suggested I use, I'd never actually heard before, and I never heard them until I played them after I'd seen the imagery, because I would leave the room. I'd push play and leave, so I might have heard the first couple of words or something. And so what we found was that with Stairway to Heaven, each time I would play it, and this wasn't one after the other, the after, it was over a period of time with different types of water, I would see the stairway image appear. And after seeing it 10 or 12 times, I began to think, well, I wonder if that means stairway. So I wrote the word stairway, because water doesn't read words, but it absorbs the energy of words and crystallizes into the energy of a word. It's a lot that I just said there, but just we'll leave it for that there right
Yeah,
now.
makes sense.
And I would see the stairway appear. So to say that I have one hydroglyph, I need to have seen the same symbol or image appear at least 50 times using the same word influence. I now have nearly 40, just clicked over 40 actually, hydroglyphs that have layers of meaning. For each layer of meaning, I need to have done and seen that image appear again 50 times. So with the stairway, I did that 50 times, saw the stairway, and then I thought, well, what do you do with a stairway? And I figured, well, in relation to the song, you climb up it. And so I wrote climb up and I kept getting the stairway. And then I realized there's layers of meaning. So that is separate to the art and it is separate to signature patterns.
Gotcha.
So then we have Laurent Costa. And so his are so fun. So I'm just going to move this sun streaming through because you look at them and you can't help but smile because they're adorable.
They are.
So adorable. And he's looking through a microscope. He has a book called Journey into the Heart of Water. And I love his quote, "The heart of water opens up to those that love it."
Oh, yeah.
So
Beautiful.
this is Thomas Hieronymus, looking very academic. And so this is the work. So I talked about the image that I took of my hand. So on the right is the frozen impression of my hand.
Yes. Wow, yes.
Fish that I talked about. Now you'll notice it's a different texture. That's because seawater freezes in a different way and looks a different way when it's frozen solid than what we might be used to as salted water. Lots of fishermen out there, they and people that mostly fishermen, I think they have the salted ice that you can buy, and it's basically tap water with salt in it. So it's not seawater. So you notice that they actually freeze differently. So you can see the outline of the fish anyway, and the fins and the gill and the eye and the tail.
Tail,
And
yes. In fact, it reminds me of a fanning upward, like a goldfish tail fanning up
yeah.
behind it.
Oh
And the
yeah.
eye is so distinct.
Yeah. It's amazing because you can kind of see that there's been a bubble that's popped, but somehow the water, or it's almost like water used that ability to do that as part of the design. This is the difference between my old technique and my new technique. This is the old, this is the new. What you might notice is that this looks very, very metallic, like a metal arrowhead.
It
Well,
does.
that's because my son, years ago, he's named, he's part Indian, and so he was named after Lord Rama. And in the stories about Lord Rama, Lord Rama always has a bow and arrow. And so Rama wanted me to get him a bow and arrow, and I'm like, oh, yeah. And I was on the fence about it. And so he said, well, if I can project the picture of an arrow into the water and stuff, will you get me an arrow, bow and arrow then? And I'm like, oh, well, maybe. And so he did this whole thing himself. He projected the thought into the water. He froze it himself and he even photographed it himself. He was a little guy then. He's 15 now, but he must have only been about 11 or 10 or 11 then. And so he did a fantastic job. And in the end, I got him his little bow and arrow to play with. So
I love that. So, and I
then.
have a teacher that we call Ram, who has us do blindfolded archery.
Oh,
And
wow.
so you telling that story, I love, there's so many threads. The same teacher would have us start our sessions by taking our water and putting it up against our third eye because the intention is going into the water, and we would say a blessing into it, something that we wanted to experience or whatever, with this understanding that water holds information. And then we would say to life and drink it and can have let that be in our bodies.
That's so beautiful. I used to wonder when I'll look at you when I say this, and we'll go straight back to the screen share. But I used to wonder when I started investigating the science of water, how water could somehow even be interested in me when I'm such a bleep on its radar. Because water is in molecular chaos when it's liquid. It's updating its information every trillionth of a second. So I asked myself, how is it that water can store information when it's moving so fast. And that's one of the reasons that the idea of water memory has been so kind of banished or pushed aside out of the realm of science, because, well, how is that possible? Because water is in constant flux. Until I spoke to a friend of mine called Dave, who is a genius in the area of quantum physics. And he said there's a big difference between molecular chaos and molecular excitement. And molecular excitement, you imagine if we're excited about something, it's because there's something to be excited about. And so, and this all comes into the area of light. Because I'll share more about this in the talk, but I might just save it for that because I think it's
And
important.
I also sacred geometry being the underlying patterns of creation, is if the underlying pattern wasn't coherent, then all you have is chaos, right?
Yeah, that's a good point too. So this is about the freezing technique. This is what it should look like in the freezer, where there's liquid and then there's this ice inside. I use a regular freezer. I photograph things on my iPhone. The most important thing is to get your timing right and the amount of water in the dish correct.
Great. And anybody can do this.
Anybody, lots of children do this, lots of adults do this. I actually share more people's work on my social media pages now than I do my own, because I think it's really important people see other people can do this. So it's on multiple levels. So it should have liquid and ice, and then this is where you're tipping it away. So I wonder if this will work. Oh, it
Amazing.
does. Okay, so what we're seeing here, I'll just stop it right here. This video is a very clever person who learned my technique, managed to figure out how to put a camera in the freezer and watch water freeze from beginning to end. And this has been a wonderful tool for me to show people what the different stages look like. This is the first freeze. You can see it's very clear. You can see these patterns. There was no intention. Water's designing of its own accord. The next things you're going to see are
Well, and I must say that it does look kind of random and everything. There are two vertical lines and a horizontal. It's like a really tall, elongated rectangle. And I just want to describe that for people who might be listening on the podcast platforms and not on the YouTube video, which will be also put up. Like, please go ahead. What
Yeah.
next?
And so thank you for describing that. And so the next two things we're going to see, and this is sped up as well, is that the second freeze looks like it's washing away, erasing all of this imagery we see here. Almost simultaneously, at the top, coming down from the top to the bottom, there is this dark bubbles. That's actually the water in between the two layers. And you can see how it clouds this whole image over. I'll just push play. So as we start to see this washing, you can see it's taking away the imagery from the top to the bottom. Those bubbles are actually in between these two layers. It's a little hard to tell, but that's what's happening. And so when we have bubbles starting to show that are slightly dark, we know that the water has overfrozen and then it cracks. And so there we see a example of a totally frozen sample of water. Hopefully it won't do this weird thing it does sometimes where it takes me all the way back to the beginning of my presentation. Okay, didn't do it. And compared to this.
That's
So we
cool.
there's such a big difference
I
in
saw how
clarity.
it kind of used the deeper lines in the first freeze became a little bit of a pattern for how it froze over it, but I see all the little black dots that you're talking about that are the bubbles, and that's over frozen, you said.
Completely, completely. This is now coming to a completely overfrozen. So you will see some aspect of that original imprint, but the details are completely lost.
Yeah, they are. That tall rectangle's barely there.
You can barely tell.
Right.
Okay, so this is super helpful. So I saw that water liked to design an imagery, and so I mentioned my friend Wendy. This is my friend Wendy on the right, and I put
Amazing.
the water on top of her photo, and you can see that water has designed her face.
Yes.
And these are the faces of some other people who I have used their pictures or pictures of statues, faces of people, of statues, and even a Roman coin down here, a sketch, photos, so a mixed bag of different types of faces and features. I've
Amazing.
slightly overfrozen this one here, but you can still see the faces coming through. And so,
Yes. Well, even on that overfrozen one, like this looks like, is that Zeus? Like his
yes.
curly, it's almost like a soft, wavy beard. And then the water has this softness to it. It's amazing.
Yeah, I love that one.
Yeah.
So here are some examples of my work as we go through. So each one has a story. I don't have time to go into every single
Yeah.
story, but the top left is a really sweet story because that dog, it smelled some water, some of the water. It sniffed the water in the petri dish, and its nose, it's such a clear dog's nose.
Is.
This is my old cat Jiva.
Oh.
And this one's kind of fun story because there was a I was at a cafe and there was this schnauzer dog drinking out of a dog bowl that they'd left out for thirsty dogs. And I asked the waitress if I could get a takeaway cup for some of the dog bowl water. And I look, I said to her, I'm not completely crazy, but this I'm doing it for this project. And she's anyway, she let me take it. But because of the formatting of this share, you don't see the rest, but even the back showed in the picture of the dog. But as we go forward, you'll notice that the pictures are not identical to that in which they were shown, and I think that shows even something very interesting because in nature, and I always say the secrets are in the subtleties, but nature can create things that look very, very similar, and you can have identical twins, but the identical twins notoriously have different personalities, and so there's differences. And so what we're seeing here is like an artist's impression of what it's being shown or played with, and I think that that's a very, very sophisticated thing.
I do too. I often talk about that when I'm teaching sacred geometry, when I'm teaching people to draw the forms and we're talking about what it's about. And people, of course, want it to be perfect. And I remind people that that our consciousness and our mind, in our mind's eye, we can hold this ideal of perfection, but this is physical reality. So those it's like the closer you get to source, the more you have this ability to conceptualize, you have the pure creation. And then this is a messy world we live in, but we still get these beautiful images. You can tell that there's definitely, like an artist's conception, and the beauty of our individuated expressions then come through art.
Well, I agree. And so here I gave some water to a pregnant lady and asked her to drink some and leave some for me whilst thinking of her baby. And this is the image that was designed. And you can see here the light around the spine. And if anyone wants to learn about spinal fluid and its significance, I could not recommend Mauro Zapatera any higher. He's a Harvard doctor. He is literally saying that the spinal fluid is the portal to cosmic consciousness. And so being able to see that this kind of light around the spine, I think that's very interesting.
I agree. In fact, yeah, a
Yeah.
lot of people who they'll work with that spinal fluid, like with Kundalini yoga, and then activate their natural DMT through
That's
different
what he talks
processes.
about. Yeah, he's talking about that in the best way he can. And really, he's a wonderful speaker, and he's done a lot out there. And we're all saying the same kind of thing, is that spinal fluid is 99% water. And he's talking about how the fact that our breathing can move that spinal fluid and how that's provable. He even told me something quite interesting about with some Buddhist monks, their goal is to die well and to attain the Buddha realization, the enlightenment, to go into nirvana. And he was saying that one of the ways that they could tell if a monk had passed on into that stage or phase is that there would be a tiny clear drop around the fontanelle on the top of the head, and that he thinks that that is the cerebrospinal fluid.
Wow.
Interesting.
That's
Over here,
very interesting. Yes.
I asked water if it knew my name, and it designed my initials. And this is how I write my initials. I didn't show water this at all, but this is what it showed me. I've asked it twice now, and actually three times, and I've seen my initials three times. But
Ah,
I
love
did
it.
something really interesting, which I think I'm going to share on my social media and today or tomorrow, because it's definitely going in my book. So I have two Indian names, my middle name and my second name. And most people know Veda Austin, but my mum spelled everything the way it sounded to her. And so my middle name was going to be Karen, but mum spelt it Karan, which is actually a Hindu word for the name of Arjuna's brother. So
Okay.
from the Bhagavad Gita.
Yes.
So I have Veda, and mum didn't know what Veda meant either. She actually had come over from New Zealand to New Zealand from England on a Russian ship, made friends with a Russian lady, and who was called Vida. Mum called me Vida, so Veda. And then as I grew up and got to know a lot of the Indian community, they called me Veda. So I don't mind, I love both, but I have these two
Yeah.
very, very Indian names. And so
Yeah.
I said,
Oh, wow.
water. I said, do you know my Indian names? And I got, instead of BA, I got VK. So
Oh, yeah.
that's what I'm going to be sharing. I wonder if I can,
That's
if we have it
cool.
up on here.
Yeah.
I'll see if I can find it for you. That would be quite fun to see.
There's,
Anyway.
as you're looking, there's so many cool threads of synchronicity happening for me as we're talking, both just the many different understandings of consciousness and the creation and the way that you can demonstrate creation coming through. But I'm very much into dream work. I've been working in a Toltec lineage, and dream work is emphasized, and I've for a long time have heard people say that water in dreams essentially represents consciousness. It represents either well, I've heard two things, which goes back to what your Maori husband, or I'm sorry, your Maori father said about the word. Would you repeat that word? That
Wairua, it means spirit.
spirit. And that there's this kind of like both the WA part refers to the water and water and spirit. And so I've heard that interpretation in dream time that water can represent your spiritual state. So if you're dreaming, you're swimming in this beautiful crystalline pool of water, that your spirit is feeling light and clear. But if it's really murky and muddy and everything, there's things under the surface to explore. And that the idea of diving down into the depths of the waters, you're going into the dark. And that's the unconscious mind, right? But there that dark is, we know with color it's like absorbing all colors, so it's really filled with light, and there's always this paradox happening, with consciousness and creation. And so I'm seeing a lot of that in the last frames. You even showed some images that I hadn't seen yet, that I understand dreams that I had that I reread this morning. I don't know why I reread them. But I just have to make this observation, like from my exploration with water and dreams and consciousness and everything that you're showing, it's really profound to me how this is showing up, how I'm seeing all these synchronicities as we're talking about the water.
So, I did a whole study on dreams with water, where I put the petri dish of water beside my bed with the intention that it captures some part of my dream. And, because I was trying to think, well, you know, how can I not be the conscious observer?
Yeah.
And that's hard because we're always the, you know, we're always observing. And so I thought, well, when I'm dreaming, maybe that would be a good place. So I, I would do that. In the morning, mm-hmm. I would wake up. Only the dreams that I, you know, when you have a dream, and I'll come back to the share in a second. You know, when okay. you have a dream and you're like grasping to get it back, and you're like, I know I dreamt, but like, oh, I can't remember it. So I would only freeze the water where I had that happen. Because if I remembered it, I could be projecting my thought into it and then, you know, be right. the influencer again, if you will, or the inspiration, if you will. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so I have done a study on dreams. There's like something like 20 dreams over several months that I've my mind was jogged by seeing the image in the ice because it was so clear. Mm-hmm. And then the whole dream came flooding back, so I was able to retell it. So
beautiful.
That suggests that water is accompanying me through the dream time, and how is that possible? And that then lends into this idea of water as the observer. Even when you talk to people who have had near-death experiences, and I've spoken to several, and three of them said that they, the same thing, they had the sense of rising, which is what a gas does,
yeah.
or a vapor.
Yeah.
And then they had this, then they would look down upon their body being resuscitated, having absolutely no attachment whatsoever to the physical body being resuscitated. So that became, they became the observer. And so I think this very much ties in. And the fact that people who have had psychedelic experiences, who have maybe like, I always think I have to be mindful not to put these two words together, but my son, he broke his arm months ago skateboarding, and it was a really bad break, and they had to reset it. So these days, and they often will give people ketamine, so they're here but not here. Mm-hmm. So he's 15, and so they, within 4 seconds, they put it in his arm, and he said, "What the f-?" And he didn't finish.
Yeah.
And then his mouth is open, his eyes are open, like bulging, and he's just looking around whilst they're yanking on his arm, resetting it, yeah. doing everything that they need to do. After he came back around, he said that he saw them working on his arm. He saw himself being worked on. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is interesting that we have the ability to do that. And how do we have the ability to do that? Well, I think the tether of the consciousness is electrical charge,
mm-hmm.
at least to the physical body.
Mm-hmm.
And heart math can tell us how far electrical charge reads. So it's not crazy and woo-woo. That's a very real thing.
There is
water in the air. That's a reality too. And I'm talking of a subtle type of that type of evaporated water.
Mm-hmm.
For example, there are 30 different types of ice. The secrets are in the subtleties, right? We know so little about water. The science is still out on even where it came from, whether it came from asteroids or meteorites, or whether it came from the inside the Earth's mantle.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we don't even know where it came from, which means we don't really know everything about ourselves, because by molecular count, again, we're 99% water. Mm-hmm. So we have this going on. And so, again, the subtleties are in that. And so the water in the air that is evaporated is attracted to our electrical charge. So an analogy could be, although on a much, much more minute scale, if you imagine what a spider web looks like with lots of dew on it.
Yeah.
So it's like we're walking around with this energetic web around us that extends out past ourselves, allowing us to absorb and extend out information
mm-hmm.
That is held within the air. And so if you then imagine that spirit, if you will, soul, subtle body, consciousness, is able to, we can observe ourselves. So it is, I think this area, this two water aspect is relating to a kind of gas or ether or vapor of kinds, one of which is moving at such a high frequency, we just don't see it, but doesn't mean it's not there.
And what about plasma?
Well, a lot of people are starting to think that the plasma is actually another ether. And so it's quite interesting because we think that plasma is very, very kind of fourth phase. It's a very much in this physical way we can see it, of which in some cases definitely is. But there is more lots of books out there sort of starting to suggest that I can't remember the name of the book now. Someone was talking about it this weekend that she was telling me that in his book, he said that something like 95% of everything in the world and universe is plasma. And I think that's an interesting idea. So, anyway, if the subtle body or the soul essentially is a second type of water, but in a different state, then it's not. It's held within the electrical charge of the body. So what happens when somebody has a near-death experience is, I mean, they're dead, right? But that doesn't mean that the electrical charge has completely stopped. How do they come back? Right. And so the idea of that is that when your heart stops beating for at least 10 to 12 minutes, there's some evidence to say that your brain still has some activity, not in the normal way, but there is some activity still happening. Then, after that, I spoke to Dr. Jerry Pollack, who was my second master to last master class. He taught us something really interesting that one of his students was doing a study on a chick that was developing within the egg at 4 days. So it's really just a tiny little, like embryonic stage, and you're able to crack an egg and actually see a chick develop. These Japanese scientists figure and they how to do it, and so it's so anyway, they were doing that, and then they stopped the heartbeat at 4 days, whilst in this embryonic kind of stage. And what they were measuring was exclusion zone and how long, whether it would drop with all the other vital signs, if you will. And yes, it dropped, but it didn't go all the way to the bottom. When they put infrared light near it, because exclusion zone, which is this fourth phase type of water that is basically a battery, the exclusion part, it means it excludes solids, so that when the solids are excluded, it creates a negative charge and it pushes out positive charge. Where you have positive and negative, you have a battery. Okay, so they put infrared light near it, and they suddenly saw the exclusion zone went all the way back up again, and it took over an hour to go back down. And so Jerry said, we may need to reconsider when someone is actually dead based off that. So if there is any movement, understanding we're an ocean, we're not distilled water. We are salt water. Salt is electrical. Any movement is creating some weak piezoelectrical charge. So as long as there's some electrical charge still coming out of us, I think that's enough for the tether to tether the spirit back. And I think that perhaps it comes and goes in various different aspects of our lives. It could be that as the embryo is developing as well, there is a soul tethered to it that's not necessarily even in it yet. We're not sure exactly of these things. Obviously, there's a lot of guesswork. But when you're trying to make sense of things and you're going, well, I don't really know. All we get told is that that the soul leaves the body. I mean, this makes some logical sense as to how.
And they can measure it gets what, 13 ounces lighter
Well,
when they
I researched into that, and there was one man that did that, but it was very, very hard to replicate. So I don't know if there's been
Okay.
more replications of that or not.
Okay. Good to know. But
So
yeah.
we don't 100% know. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, we have these ideas
We
of what's
do.
going on. And just because we don't have the equipment yet to measure them or observe them doesn't mean that they don't exist, but we have suggestive evidence that is part of your work, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I think there's so many people that have had near-death experiences that are saying the same thing, that there is this feeling of rising, which is when a gas expands, it cools. And I think that's also why people feel spirit is cold. Someone once said that death is like taking off an uncomfortable shoe. It's kind of like we suddenly have this expansiveness of being able to see things in a not only a new way, but in a probably more realistic way. So these are just some more examples of my work here. Water was exposed to a wedding invitation here. I've put it beside this because it looks like a wedding ring,
Amazing.
but there was no wedding ring picture on the wedding invitation. It was just beside the word, mostly beside the word wedding. So it's interesting because we've been able to take that ring image, and because it was exposed to a wedding invitation, when I've used the word marriage and written the word marriage, I always see a ring. So that became a hydroglyph. So
Yes, that makes sense. You've got a
this is
whole
interesting.
series on hydroglyphs.
Yeah.
Love
Oh,
it.
yeah.
Oh,
They're
wow.
a big deal. So over here, you see, I put my thumb into the petri dish and removed it. But you might notice that there is a chip in the nail on the image, on the ice image.
It's really easy to see that chip. Yes.
Well, a few hours after doing that test, I chipped my nail on my thumb in exactly the same place.
Oh, in the future.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Wow. These
So
are
they
all
carry on.
amazing.
So this one here, as I mentioned, I worked as an artist as well, as an oil painter, and I like to paint animals and birds. So I was looking at this lady's picture, this South African artist, and I was stared at the picture for about a minute. I closed my eyes, held the picture in the room of my eyes and closed the doors of my eyelids, held it like that for a while, and then opened my eyes, looked at the petri dish of water, and then froze it. And you could see that by doing that, the image has been really translated in the ice. This is an important picture
It's
because the influence was, I just used something close to me. I just put the butter knife over it. But you can see on either side, these are the coasters that were not part of
the
it.
coaster showed up.
They did. It's showing that water is observing everything, not just
Yeah.
what we are directing it to show. So
And they're
I'm not the
so
only one.
clear.
Yeah. So this is fun because it shows other people's work. I am not the
Great.
only one that can do this.
And they're just as clear. Amazing. I have seen a lot of these. I love that you're on social media and that these people who aren't watching this, who are listening only, can see these also on your website, I assume, and your social media under Veda Austin. This is great.
Absolutely.
Keep going.
Oh, well, in my book, it's page after page after page, but this is really just to give an idea so far. So I mentioned and touched on light. We're going to talk about that. If I can get the water at the perfect time of freezing, just as it's beginning to send its little soldier shoots out, if you will, it's like these are like little
Yeah,
spears. You might notice
they
there
are.
is a light around all of this area.
I
Well,
do.
that's in the freezer, and it's actual light that my camera has captured emanating out of the ice. So
Yeah.
imagine that water is mostly photons and it's absorbing photons, which of course is light. And I think that it's actually, well, before I say what I think is happening, I'm going to share a story which is significant. When I was speaking at the end, I was the last speaker at the banquet of last year's annual water conference hosted by Jerry Pollack and others. And I shared this to a bunch of biologists and physicists and scientists, and was nervous to share it a little bit because It's coming from a more Indigenous perspective, but when I did share it, there was a lot of aha moments for people. So this lady told me that she could speak to bees, and she said she'd watched their hives for long periods of time. Eventually, a bee came out and communicated to her and said, "Please don't look at our hives for so long, because your conscious expression is putting too much light in the hive, and we like it to be darker." And so where we put our conscious expression is where we put our light. And so I think it's light that paves the way for the design of the imagery of the ice.
Beautiful, beautiful.
So I
That's
mentioned
go ahead.
communicate in these three ways: signature patterns, art, and hieroglyphs. So a signature pattern is some, and there's three main ones: spring water, collected within and frozen within half an hour of collection, tends to form very large hexagonal patterns. We
Yes.
can tell when water's been filtered because it has this filter glyph somewhere in the crystallography. Rainwater looks a lot like a fanning pattern with a curve, and tap water, municipal tap water, looks like a lot of lines and dots. And what's interesting is, I'm going to stop this particular share and go into this area, which I screenshot so I could share with you. So here we have the degradation, one aspect of the degradation of a hexagon. So I call them fern hexagons. So when you have like all these ferns coming off the star, that kind of star kind of creates the hexagonal shape. The next thing that will happen in this particular area is that the fern will detach and it will just be a fern on its own. And then that kind of lends to a more less defined fern, which then leads to this kind of grassy type look, which eventually leans into these kind of lines. So this is one aspect where these ferns detach and then they end up becoming grasses. But the other way from the hexagon is this. So this is the hexagon, which I call the fern hexagon because of the ferns that come off it. Like I mentioned in the last one, it's where the fern comes off and kind of becomes a grass and then becomes a line. Well, as water moves away from its source, it starts to change in its hexagonal patterns. They start to shift and change. These lines open up. It opens up and then it kind of becomes the star shape, which becomes smaller, and then it just becomes a small little hexagonal pattern, which eventually becomes a dot. So then we're left with lines and dots, which is what we see in the tap water. So when we go back here, you can see why out of the hexagon have formed all of these natural patterns. So it's quite interesting because rainwater looks a lot like the way in which where the fern has transformed into the grass with lots of grasses together. The lines and dots are within the tap water, and the filtered glyph looks like a straight version of a compacted rain glyph. So all of these things or like a bunch of lines from the hexagon, for example. So we can see that that's really interesting. But when you get to understand the signature patterns of your water, which I recommend to anyone and everyone to begin with, because if you don't know them, firstly, you're not forming any kind of relationship with water or getting to know it first. You're going straight into do something for me magical. It's kind of like meeting someone and going, right, will you marry me straight away without knowing them at all. There is no real introduction. It's from zero to hero. And water teaches you those boundaries. It is not a photocopier. It is wild and it won't do what you want it to all the time.
Very, very good point to make. Very important. Thank you
That's
for
why water
stating
to
that.
me, yeah, water to me is more of a spiritual teacher, because if I assume I know what water's going to do, it won't do it. It requires me to be in a state of curiosity, and not expecting of it. And it's much like if you imagine what it feels like to go into a forest and have a wild animal come close to you or even eat out of your hand, whether it's a bird or a deer or a rabbit, you know the feeling is so much different than going to a petting zoo where all the animals are used to people, because you know that animal has chosen you. That animal is wild. Well, the same applies for the relationship that I have with water. There is a trust that has to be formed first before you launch into the rest of the work. So the getting to know you process, the getting to know yourself process is very important, because even the people that love water and already believe they have a very strong relationship with water can be very tested by water using this method. Because there is an assumption that water is going to immediately design something amazing for you. And if it doesn't do that and it shows you a signature pattern instead, there is like, oh, there's a disappointment. It's like, oh my God. The ego comes in and goes, well, this can't be real. And I think that's the point. If you're willing to actually be like water and look into the mirror of water and see, oh, have I let go of some of my ego? Have I managed to put that on the side for a bit and just stayed in curiosity or not? And why is this coming up for me? What is my attachment to outcome? And why is it so strong? Is what has this got to do with my sense of purpose and self? And what can I learn? Then you'll go very far in this work if you can do that. And I'm required to do that daily, but
Well,
I've learned.
and Veda, I think that it's important that people can absorb that information that you just stated and apply it not just to this work with your methods, but how we inhabit the earth and how we treat each other.
Yeah,
Right?
that's very important.
I mean, what could we create then when just looking at these images is so inspiring? What if we built the relationship with all the elements and each other?
Yeah,
Please continue.
absolutely. So this is a little wee selection of hieroglyphs here, but I've got more coming up. So like I said, there's symbols in ice that are repeated. Now, I'm going to flick through some of these a little quicker than I'd like to, just because I realize that it's easy to talk for a very long time on this. And
I'd love to.
so this is the signature pattern of frozen tap water, as we would imagine. Now, tap water gets the worst rap ever, and I feel very badly for it. I'm not talking about drinking tap water. In the West, we're so fortunate that we have a choice of what to drink. And there's a lot of people that give tap water a bad rap. And they're like, oh God, you don't want to drink that. It's got heavy metals. It's got X, Y, and Z. It's not structured. It's denatured. It's dead water. The term dead water is not a truth. Water doesn't die. It can be polluted, but it will always be one of its stages. It will evaporate. So this is interesting. It's actually an immortal in some sense of the word. The fact that we see here, this is the same tap water. So I let the crystallography of the tap water melt, then held that melted water to my heart in a loving way for a minute, and then refroze it. You can see that it's this beautiful fern has started to appear. And
Very
as we've
beautiful.
looked at the aspects of the ferns, we see that it is direct relation to coming back into its original form. So what we see here, though, is a structural change, but not a chemical change. So, what does that mean? Well, what that means is the most intimate overlay into what it is to be human is an emotion. So, it's like an emotional change. I call it the energetic state of water or the energetic health of water. And another Maori word is mauri, which means life force energy. So what we are identifying in this crystallography is the life force energy of water. And here we see that the life force energy has improved significantly through a loving intention. And we can see that it has happened multiple times. So here are various different examples of the same thing.
The bottom left looks like it has a bird flying, and it's like a wave coming. There's so much I'm seeing in that, but I see this progression is just beautiful.
So then we see tap water changing again through silk filtration or being in a Tibetan singing bowl. And filtering water through silk is something I saw when I spent a lot of time in India. And I don't go really as a tourist. I've gone for spiritual practices, and I go out to the villages, and in the villages, I came across three ladies, two of them holding out a silk sari and one of them pumping water through it into a bucket. And when I asked the interpreter what was happening, they said that filtering water through silk helps to filter the water in a physical way, but also it helps, once you drink it, it filters the heart, was the way in which it was described to me.
I love
So
that.
even when you put water beside silk, it starts to build exclusion zone. So I always recommend to people who are very handy to get some recycled silk saris and maybe make a bag to put your bottle in. So that way it keeps the light out of the water, because living water, this term living water, is thrown around a lot, but the idea of spring water being the closest, or one of the closest to what might be termed as living water in a more spiritual sense, because spirit and the word living water tend to come together, is that it is very, very sensitive to artificial light. So you might have spring water in a clear bottle, but as if it's exposed to unnatural light or a lot of light, then even too much sunlight, it can start to change its patterns very quickly. And so that's it. So by making a lovely silk bag, keeps the light out and helps to build the exclusion zone in your water. So it's a lovely
Amazing.
thing to I like to suggest. You can
Yes.
use my technique for all manner of other fluids, including urine. So here we can see the difference between a dehydrated person and the same person after becoming hydrated. And here we can see the difference between a stressed person and the same person after an hour of meditation. And
Oh,
you can see
wow.
there is a really big difference. And this is water and minerals coming out of you. It knows you very intimately. This was what happens if I'm frustrated once doing crystallography. Water doesn't resonate at a lower frequency, so it's not judging me, but it doesn't design for me either. What it does do is thicken. It's as if, you know how we looked at the three stages of water and how the three stages of water freeze, the free freezing stages, and that third layer clouds everything over. It's like the three have compacted upon each other. And even though this is the correct stage, the samples darken. So it's like the
Dense.
density of that feeling kind of makes the water a little more dense. So it doesn't design in complex crystallography. However, if I'm sad, unintentionally sad, by the way, so this isn't, these two examples here of the sad faces are not from me projecting the feeling of sad into the water. That's me doing crystallography and water seeing me. So it's kind of very, very special that water is designed how I'm feeling. And so I feel like I have a friend all the time that actually sees me when I'm in any emotion. We talk here about wairua. I mentioned that. So this is a picture here of my mum and I, me, little me and my mum.
Sweet.
And I used to live in Japan and work over there, and my mum and I would write letters to each other. And at the end of every letter, mum would attempt to draw a circle. Her circles were terrible, and she'd be the first to admit it. And she would do a little heart in the middle. And I missed her because I still miss her. She passed away in 1999. She had cancer, breast cancer that spread to the next breast that eventually led to bone cancer. And she was my best friend. She was just an angel, honestly, just the most beautiful, best mum I could have ever had. And I missed her, and I said to the water, "Can you connect to my mum?" Having absolutely no idea, because there were so many things about mum and I that the water could have shown me. And mum used to say, "I will always be with you, even when I'm not in this body anymore." And this is the first image I got of this misshapen circle with a heart in the middle. And then a year later on her birthday, I asked the same question, got the same response. This one is from, it's a longer story, so I'll shorten it. Essentially, I asked water to connect to a friend's dad, and I left it overnight, and oddly, most of the water evaporated. So I froze what was left of it. All the water froze into this heart shape. Here I was thinking about on my mother's side, far down in our ancestral line, there were many, well, several women, two or three of them, which were burnt at the stake for being midwives, considered to be witches. I was thinking of them, and if I can zoom in, you can see the straight nose, which is very, very, very much in my mother's family, and the face, and it's
Oh,
almost like she's
yes.
crown of kinds or something. And then this was for a lady whose cat had died, and she was, you know, some people, their animals are extensions of babies for them, and she was so worried that the cat could see her. Her question wasn't, "Is the cat okay?" Her question was, "Can the cat see me?"
And
And
it's
so,
just showing the eyes, like the
yes,
nose
you
is
can
even.
see
Oh my
the
gosh.
ears, and it's like
Yes.
looking down to me, but it's super clear. And so the next one. Well, this is a long story, but I was in a horrendous car accident, which was, I was in this car wreck.
Oh my
And
gosh. It's amazing that you're alive and that you're here.
it is. We went under a truck, rolled twice, and the driver died immediately. And it led me on to a healing journey with water, which I do share a lot in a
Beautiful.
lot of podcasts, but I actually do need to. I've probably got about half an hour longer I can talk, but it would take
Continue.
me a long time to share all about this. And we have a lot of other things to share. And if anyone wants to hear the story, it's on a lot of my podcasts on my website. You can go and see. But why my son's photo is there is that basically, when I was living in Christchurch, and when Rama here was nearly three, he, you know, children, they hide behind things, spying on their parents, but they're also very, very innocent. And a friend had come over, and I was talking about this car accident that I'd been in, and my son had been li listening into our conversation. And by the time I finished, Rama jumped up on my lap, and he said, "I remember that, mummy." He said, "I remember the window wipers and the tires, and I came down out of the clouds and I went like this and I saved you. And when I knew you were okay, I climbed back up the ladder into the clouds." And I thought that was so incredibly special. And but what's also interesting is he used the term ladder. And you know, if we go back to Stairway to Heaven, we see seeing a stairway in that. And this idea is, and this terminology, it's very interesting. And you know, I was talking to a woman who's going to be speaking on my next masterclass, which is over 3 days, June 3rd, 4th, and 5th. And there's people from all around the world speaking. From the topic is what different religions, cultures, and ancient texts can teach us about water. I can honestly say that it might be the most significant masterclass I ever do, let alone this year. Because the things that people are sharing will teach us more about water in those 3 days than we might ever learn anywhere else outside of our own investigations and deep relationship with water. And one of the ladies I was speaking to is she's a nun actually, and she said there have been reports, not your everyday nun at all. I mean, she's become a very dear friend, and we speak regularly each week. And she said there have been a lot of reports of people, of children, innocently saying about how they came out of a UFO. They said that they actually came out of a spaceship to save someone or to be with somebody or to be with their parent. And they said that, "No, I was with God up in the spaceship," is what they would say. So these terms that we people use, that's quite interesting. You know, you don't know really, but they're so innocent at such a young age, and there's such wise people. So there is this kind of flowing on from that, pardon the pun. There's this like thing going around on Instagram it's done a lot of rounds, and people have sent it a million times to me, and I find it really, really interesting and tantalizing, this idea of what if water were God. And within this, I'm not suggesting that it is or it isn't, but I find this next thing very, really, really interesting. So on the Instagram reel, the guy says, well, that would mean that God is in us and all around us, above us and below us. It would explain why a woman's waters break when we're born, why some religions observe that ritual of baptism. If water was God, then that would mean that God has no gender. God takes the shape of the container God appears in, which would explain why we have so many different belief systems. It would mean that all bodies of water were holy, that a thunderstorm is a church without walls, that when the rain falls, it's an act of God's death giving life, and when it evaporates again, it's the day of resurrection.
Beautiful. I love that.
So healing by proximity, we're getting to the end. I'll whiz through these. So I've done a lot of studies on chicken egg albumin. Albumin is a part of the egg white. So if you've done any cooking, you would have know that egg white is very gloopy. And so there are two parts to the egg white, a part which is thin like saliva, and then another part which is thick and gloopy. The thin one that runs out like saliva is what I freeze. And in healthy free-range eggs, fresh free-range eggs, there are six identified patterns that I've named. So far as I know, I'm the first person that actually has discovered this. Mm-hmm. And the last two, the pollen and the small star, are the two most rudimentary of these six patterns. Caged hen eggs can only form the last two. Oh. They don't form the more complex patterns which look like feathers and flowers in the mm-hmm. volcano, for example, or the weave. So mm-hmm. here is an example of a free-range happy hen egg compared to a caged hen egg.
Oh,
and
my
you can
gosh.
See the topography is starkly different.
Yes.
Now, I've done thousands of these. This isn't about projecting consciousness or any of these things. This is the biological way in which egg white forms when you do it in this manner. So I freeze it for about 10 minutes, and I don't, you know, this is a different method. So anyone can do this too. And I recommend children when they're doing school projects to do the egg album in one, because it's super fun.
Yeah.
So I did a test whereby I was inspired by Luc Montagnier's work and his concepts of DNA teleportation. They're not concepts, actually. He identified that if you take two vials of water, put one strand of DNA in one and put them side by side mm-hmm. and leave them overnight with a low frequency and radiant light, the next day he put a precursor to DNA to be able to identify if there's any DNA into the vial that only had water that was sitting next to the one that had a sequence of DNA that he'd identified. They found that there was, in fact, this precursor to the same that showed that there was DNA with the same sequence in the water that was just water. So that's why it's called DNA teleportation. You think my work is like next level, kind of like just trying to get your head around it. That, and this guy is a serious scientist, or was. He sadly passed mm-hmm. last year. And he won the Nobel Peace Prize for discovering AIDS. He's a very serious scientist.
Well, and I can totally believe it myself. I mean, I've done some work to just find my own truth. And in the work that I'm doing with Sacred Geometry Portal, this is what I do. How can you find your own truth? Not just, you know, read it in a book and believe it. I mean, there's a lot of books out there, but anything that you really want to know, how can you find out for yourself? And so people who subscribe to my email list through my website can hear. I have a series of emails, and in one of them I tell the story of my experience of teleportation, very real to me, using sacred geometry. But you know, it's hard to repeat unless I think you become so you understand and accept so much that things can happen outside of what we think of as normal reality. Yeah.
I have a diagram which might be helpful for that too, because I'm working with a quantum physicist for my book, because there's a
Great.
chapter called Transference, Light and Quantum Physics, whereby I've invited him to try his very best to share how this work happens, how my work is working. And
Nice.
although it's very very high level science and things like that, he's done it in a way which I think at the very least we can grasp. And there's a diagram which is quite helpful, which I can show you later or if we have time. But what I was wanting to do was to see if I surrounded a free range egg with caged hen eggs, would the caged hen eggs improve, or would the free range hen egg degrade, or would nothing happen?
Yeah.
So I set them up like this diagram here. The middle one is the free range egg, and then it's surrounded by caged hen eggs. These are the controls. So I use the same batch of caged hen eggs and this free range egg, hen egg.
Okay.
So this was the result. Here you can see that the free range hen egg hasn't
Oh.
got worse at all. You see all the complex volcano patterns. But what is really remarkable is that by proximity, all the eggs that were sitting directly beside the free-range egg have changed so significantly that they look very much like free-range eggs.
They
And
do.
you just don't see that in all the thousands of tests I've done in caged hen eggs. The ones that were further away improved, but not as significantly. So I repeated this with some more free-range eggs, and these are the controls, did the same exact setup, and you can see that the same exact thing happened. And so this is extremely interesting. So I think that nature is looking to improve rather than degrade, especially in this embryonic stage. I also think that information transfer is possible because water is a liquid antenna and egg albumin is 90% water. And given that none of these eggs were fertilized, it's fascinating that information was transferred to the caged eggs, perhaps meaning that the potential for life was there from the beginning, which is a big thing to, we could probably do 3 hours on that. And then my personal takeaway from this, given that we are by molecular count 99% water, is simply if we heal ourselves, we heal others. I remember my teacher in India saying that some of the what most amazing saints and people that have graced the earth have their energy has reached people they would never meet. Spontaneous healing has often happened from people who are vessels of divine love, and their energy really just spreads throughout the world just by being who they are. So even in the when we feel like, what can we do? By the simple act of learning to heal yourself, love yourself, be kind to yourself, that in turn helps people around you. You know, just by, it's why we're so attracted to certain people that make us feel good. You know, there's always that one person we can usually think of who's always we go to if we want to feel better or talk to, or just has that effervescent kind of personality that we want to be around.
Definitely.
So this is relative. This is a, I'll read it because I think it's really interesting and it's relative to consciousness having such an impact on things, not just human things, not just water even, not that water's ever just water, but on a robot. So I remember my friend Rupert Sheldrake talking about this experiment that they did with a chicken and a ro with chicks in a robot. So this man conducted this experiment to show telekinesis, which is essentially influencing objects at a distance by the power of mind. So he used newly hatched chicks, and a specially made robot. So the chickens and all birds believe that the first animate creature or thing they see after hatching is their parent and become closely bonded. So this man introduced the newly hatched chicks to his special robot. They loved it and wanted to be close to it. The robot could drive itself around on wheels and had a pen underneath to trace its path on paper as it moved. It had a random number generator in the steering, and every few seconds it changed direction. A large table with a low side wall is pre to prevent the robot falling off was covered by a sheet of white paper. The robot was placed in the center of the table and set moving, and it traced a random pattern across the table. So this man put, I think it's called Piok, put the robot in the center of the table and switched it on. It traced a random pattern, and he put 15 chickens, which were bonded to the robot in a small cage at the end of the table, put the robot in the center of the table and switched it on. The chicks felt anxiety when they were moved away from them, so yearning for it to be close, so they were desperate for it to come close to them again. And these chicks had a profound effect on the robot's movement. It moved towards the chickens and stayed at the end of the table closest to them. He put non-bonded chickens into the cage and the robot traced a random pattern again. He made the room dark and put a small candle on the robot. Even non-attached chickens would bring it closer for the comfort of the light. Mm-hmm. When he put rabbits in the cage, they were scared of it and it made it stay away at the far end of the table. But when they got used to it, they began to draw it near to them. He repeated the experiment many times, always with the same result. So thoughts have measurable energy. They have effect at a distance. There is a medium through which thoughts can travel. It is the ether or the source field, the background energy of the universe, the soul, the source of and sustainer of everything. So then I got tap water and I sat it beside spring water. You might see there is this pattern in the spring water that looks like a lotus. Mm-hmm. That is actually a lotus hieroglyph, which means purity and enlightenment. And I often see that in spring water, freshly collected. So
love it.
I left them both overnight. As you can see, the tap water has improved to look more like rainwater.
Mm-hmm.
But here, the spring water also has improved. If I zoom in, you can see that there are two lotuses on either side. Together, uh-huh. the two lotuses form a heart. So by giving purpose to the spring water, it has also improved. So we come to hydroglyphs. Mm-hmm. So I call it a 3D emotional language. It actually has an interesting overlay with hieroglyphs of mm-hmm. ancient Egypt. And that okay. it is hieroglyphs were designed to be seen and felt rather than spoken. They portray vast kind of conceptual messages. And it's they're quite different to the way in which we understand language. Mm-hmm. So the simplified version of a hydroglyph, which is what I've called them, is that they are symbols in ice that have one or more meanings. And I derive these meanings by using words as my way of communicating prior to phrasing. I'm essentially inviting water to show me a symbol for each presented word. So to say I have one hieroglyph, I need to have seen the same image appear at least 50 times. So there are two quotes here that I really like. One is by a person called Manny P. Hall,
mm-hmm.
who says, "When the human race learns to read the language of symbolism, a great veil will fall from the eyes of men." And Carl Jung says, "The man who speaks with primordial images speaks with a thousand tongues." So,
is it any wonder there's hieroglyphs all over some of the ancient cultural sites? Yeah.
Exactly. It's not a surprise. And
yeah.
So this one here, there are 64 examples here. So we can see, no, they're not random and they are identifiable. So a frilled angle is the symbol for the energy of the word message. Remembering that the water is crystallizing into the energy of a word. It's the difference between me holding up my glasses, right? And mm-hmm. you not falling over in excitement because, oh, well, it's just glasses. We've labeled them glasses, okay?
Yeah.
If I said, this is the energy of my glasses, we could say a lot more about them. The energy of my glasses is that they have some of my energy in them because I wear them. They're shaped to my face. They have the energy of sight and vision. There's a lot you could say about the energy of something.
Right.
So the energy of a message in relation to water designs this incredibly detailed triangle, which has this kind of almost like ancient writing on top of it with this frill around the edge.
Yeah.
I've likened it to things in nature because I think we can learn a lot about what the meanings might be depending on what they look like. naturally. So I've aligned it with a ancient shark's tooth. So when we zoom in, we can see, oh, look, that's right. I can identify these patterns. But when we do that, we might notice that at the tip of some of them, there's a hearts. There's a heart
Yes.
there, there's a heart there, a heart here. Now, what we've learned is that some of them have hearts and some of them don't. The one that have hearts, the message is a emotional or loving message. So this
Isn't
is
that
the winter
amazing?
tree glyph. It looks like if you've ever kind of gone to a winery in winter where there's no leaves or anything on the vines, it kind of looks like that.
Yes.
It means winter. It also means change. Its most predominant meaning is change.
Right.
The empty circle is the energy of the word completion.
Of course.
The
Let's see.
lotus, which we've just seen, means enlightenment
Beautiful.
and purity. And when I say other potential meanings, you might read that there. It means that I've used those words, but I haven't done it 50 times yet. The fern hexagon has is one of my most complex things, images. Because it has meanings which almost appear like there's a duality, but there isn't. So the word living is the most predominant meaning for this glyph. We also see this in water which has just come out of a spring as a signature pattern. So that word living is very, very vocal for this particular hydroglyph. But a man reached out to me years ago and said that he was only given a few months to live. Could I ask water what death looked like? So I wrote the word death, but I kept seeing this living glyph. And I'm like, oh, that can't be right. And then I kept doing it, and well more than 50 times because I wanted to make sure I was correct. And then it dawned on me, of course, water doesn't die.
Right.
Water transitions. So the word death to water is the same as the word living. There
Right.
is no difference. You don't, there is no death, there is only transition. Gratitude is another very aligned word for this symbol.
I like that.
So these line ladders mean information. We're sure they mean much more than that, but that's as far as we've got thus far. And this is about those tips I talked about how the hearts at the end of the tips of the message glyph kind of create this idea that there is a message. And when I asked water, what is a hydroglyph? It answered me in hieroglyphs using the message glyph and the living glyph. So they are living messages.
Love
And
it.
then lastly, but not least, I want to talk about a man who is a Russian scientist as well as a psychiatrist by the name of Gennady Krokolev. Now, what's fascinating about Gennady is that he worked in a psychiatric place working with patients who were having hallucinations for somewhere in the region of 20 years, and he wanted to see whether or not, and I'll show you his work in a second, he wanted to see whether or not their visions had some foot into in reality, I suppose. So he wanted to photograph the retina of their eyes as they were having a hallucination. So he made these goggles. He's got these kind of goggles that took the lens out and attached it to the box thing that came out of an old-fashioned camera called a Zenith camera. And that blocked the light out for the people, but they could still be in a room that was light, so they wouldn't feel scared or anything. And when they had a vision, Gennady would be taking photographs. And of the 200 people that he did this with, 117 were able to confirm that the images that developed on the in the on the photographs was in fact what they were seeing. Some were so extraordinarily clear, it's like hard to even imagine that that's real, and some were a little more distorted, but all the same, it's actually extremely hard to find any of his pictures on the internet because it's like people don't want. So somehow there is. It's not that I don't know that it's a conspiracy against people wanting to see Gennady's work, but it's so exceptionally profound, and a lot of it is in Russian as well. But the interesting part is that Within the last 15 years, there was a study done by more Russian scientists. Rather than using a psychiatric patient, they used someone who could remote view. And they used the same setup as Genity, except that they used a scuba diving mask with no lens in it to attach to the box part of the camera. And what the scientists did was they stood behind a wall and they would either hold up a number or a shape. And as the remote viewer tuned into what they were showing, a lot of banging and crashing going along. It's so windy in New
It's
Zealand right now where I
okay.
am. She would tune in to whatever the scientist was holding up, the person would take a photo of her retina and they shared the results, and you could see the triangle. You could see the number one, for example, that would showed up from what she held in her vision. And so there were two theories. The latter is more likely the one that most people will feel comfortable with. But the first one was that Genity thought maybe there is a secondary layer of consciousness, like another realm that is being picked up. And if you think about the sensitivity of a camera, cameras pick up orbs quite a bit
Yes.
and various other anomalous things that we might not be able to see, but perhaps dogs and cats can see, for example.
They're
And then
just in a different
we
frequency
have,
range.
And then we have the second theory, which is that the brain takes information and projects that through to the retina. And the retina takes that information, translates it into picture imagery, like a little video, and that becomes like a hologram. And it's this holographic image, which we just can't see with our eyes, because we're limited so much to the amount we can actually see in the world by the function, the way our eyes are formed. And that's what the camera is picking up. And so I think that that's fascinating, and I think that's very relative to my work, in that there's a big difference, though, is that they need to have a very, very focused thought to be able to create this. So what I'm seeing is a very subtle thoughts, like water is picking up on feelings, and sometimes water understands our feelings better than we do. And so it's a very different in that way, but there is some science to say, oh, well, look. So these Russian scientists put a documentary to court together. It's in Russian, but there is another version with a really bad dubbed over English. You can suffer through it. But it's called something like "Thought is Material, It's Proven." So hopefully that's given some people something, some ideas about what I'm doing, and some new kind of thoughts about water.
So much. Yes. I love how complete you've explored this and are still exploring, and then, there's just so many different directions that you can take and test out, and then have people collaborating with you and your online, the people that you're talking to, your online groups. It's just amazing because, and coming from it, the standpoint of sacred geometry, I'm always thinking about consciousness has a play in this. Where does consciousness come into this? Well, if consciousness is working with these building blocks and creative, to create with, it is source, creator, whatever you want to call it, that is bringing this life to us, and using water as such a primary vehicle. That's what I'm getting from all of this. There's so many aspects of this that of your talk that I'm going to want to rewatch and re-listen to this over and over again, and keep up with your work and start doing this myself.
Yeah, my
It's
friend Moses
profound.
Blackman, he says that water is the glove on the hand of consciousness. And lots of people ask me, is water conscious, or is it your consciousness that's impacting the water? And in the beginning, I would have thought that my consciousness was impacting the water. But I've seen water reveal things and respond rather than react, and choose whether or not it's going to respond or react, and what it's going to say, where I've used words that I have no picture imagery for, like the word ego. It doesn't conjure up like an image like we would for the word rose, for example. So ego, when I used that word, water designed this inflated shoulders, thin neck, little face and giant balloon head, and it was looking away, which was, it was actually should be in an art gallery. It's such an incredibly profound piece. I think that when I used the word trust, for example, I saw this little stick figure riding a surfboard, and there's a lot of trust that has to be. We're riding a wave and out in the big wild ocean, you know, there's a certain amount of trust in yourself and trust in the water and in your, to be able to surf. So this, these ideas of being, water being able to communicate, take it out of it being something that consciousness is working through, to potentially it being actual source of consciousness itself. And that's very hard for a lot of people to even get their head around, which is why I suggest, rather than throw the baby out with the bathwater, which is an awful thing to say, but I found that, look at it as art. Look at this as organic art that is really remarkable. So that you get to ask, what does this mean to me, rather than, well, this is just a load of bollocks, I don't understand it, therefore it's not real.
Right.
So,
and that's one of the main messages that I've also gotten from this too, is how non-dualistic these messages are, the non-judgment and all of that. And that it's relationship. We're in relationship with water. You know, whether you want to say water is separate from us or we are water, in a way, it's like we're, you know, it's so vast beyond, I think, what our words try and define. And our words are quite often set up for the polarity of, you know, this reality that we're in. And so there's always this sacred geometry is always attempting to balance the opposites. And even the yin yang symbol, or the Hunab Ku, the cosmic butterfly symbol of Mesoamerica and the Toltec, you know, lineage, they're all attempting to say you have these parts that are part of the whole. And, you know, I feel like that's a really important aspect in how we approach water and how we respect it. Of course, you know, I think that that's another really beautiful message that the water has, is kind of like, we're in relationship, then I can give you something better if you come with that as well. And if you don't, okay, this is what it is. Okay. You know, it's not a judgment thing. It's more like you said, it's like this beautiful reflection. And I know there's people who, like, I have a friend, Robin Lansung, who has many near-death experiences, and she's talked about that kind of like encountering this watery substance, but that it's a part of, you know, what we are. Or I've heard different people, of course, in dream time, like, oh, I could breathe. I'm underwater and I could breathe. And that, what's that saying about the goldfish in the water? That we're like the goldfish in the water. Does the goldfish know it's swimming in water? You know?
Yeah.
Literally, like you said, it's in the air around us, and it seems to bridge the elements in so many ways. So I
Sorry, I was going to say, water is always in search of itself. Someone once said to me, what if water is expressing its consciousness through us and every living thing on the planet and beyond, to observe itself from every single perspective?
Ooh. Beautiful. Yeah, I like that. I like that. I'm really appreciative of our time. I have other questions I'd love to dive into at some point, because I start thinking about things like, now we're looking at AI technology, and I'm just, in comparison, I'm thinking, I don't know that it could hold a candle to water, you know, but it's a whole nother. What?
Yeah, it's a whole nother conversation.
Yeah.
Because, like, this fourth phase water that Jerry Pollack talks about, they've managed to actually It can solidify in room temperature, and they can, and they solidify not as an ice but as a crystal. And when they're working on the technology to use that crystalline fourth phase water into a USB to store wildly huge amounts of information. So we
And yet
can
we
use
have
it.
it running through our veins and our bodies.
We absolutely do. I do think that we have this opportunity to look at the world through a through it through the lens of water, of which is actually we're actually seeing it through. And that's really interesting. And as far as AI goes, I use the word artificial intelligence, and in my book I share, I think it's somewhere quite far down in my Instagram too, where Water designed the most artificial looking, like wiry shape I've seen, but it made sense. It was a logical shape. It looked like a specific type of shape.
Oh, yeah.
Fascinating, really interesting.
That
So,
is
yeah,
so
it
much.
under there's so much we can do, and by learning it to the technique, you can do it yourself, which I really encourage for people to try to do.
And so, how would you recommend they engage with you to learn this process?
The best way is just to go to my website, which is my name, vedaaustin.com. And my Instagram, I share daily. And if you do something really cool, that's very likely I'll ask you if I can share your work as well. So it's vedaaustin_water. And on Facebook, it's vedaaustin@waterresearcher.
Great. Thank you. I am really, really grateful for this time. My mind is blown and I'm re-inspired because I've have researched a lot about water and energy in the past and started to feel like, where are we going with this? We had Standing Rock, not too long ago here in the US, and is very concerned about the future. But when you're bringing to light this information and it can spread around the world, I'm just re-inspired that all things in the right time, and we can become more aware and conscious with this information of how we're living on the planet and connecting with other realms and just what we assume is an inanimate object, like a tree that has water in it. I mean, we know it's living, but there's so much more than what we've seen so far. So thank you for opening our eyes so much,
Well, it's
just
absolutely my
blowing my
pleasure.
mind. Yeah.
Absolutely my pleasure. And I always think that water is trying to flood the hearts of people. So that's why it's not doing this to be small. It's really doing this to be because it's time. And I think if the future is ancient, we're learning things that probably our ancient ancestors understood already. We might come to a time when we go and find in Antarctica there are hieroglyphs all over the tunnels underneath there, perhaps. So you never
Perhaps. Yeah,
know.
yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for
Thank you too, Veda. I really appreciate our talk and this time and wish you all the best.
Thank you.
So
Thank you so
thank you.
much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This podcast has been a production of Sacred Geometry Portal. Dive deeper into the portal by subscribing at sacredgeometryportal.com. Find opportunities to learn directly with Elizabeth by going to Sacred Geometry Portal on Patreon. Infinite fractal blessings, and thank you for listening.